Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, coming to you live from Spokane, Washington, 2018 USAPL Raw Nationals, joined as always, except for that one time, by marvelous Max Montana. And our guest today, multiple-time USAPL National Champion, IPF World Champion, Bryce Lewis. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, we've tried. We've been trying for there's many failed attempts in getting this one set up. So I'm glad that we could
so
make
successful
it
successful now.
Yeah, glad that we could make it happen here, where you're mostly a commentator, Bryce Lewis, here at 2018 Raw Nationals. Do you like that? You have fun with that?
It's a ton of fun, man. I did my research. I wanted to make sure, like, I gave these lifters, you know, their justice and not screw it up and mess with their record. So,
do you have any, like, good catchphrases?
No, I need to come up with some catchphrases. Mostly it was just me and Elliot Feldman, who's a referee there. Trying to know the lifters and know their Instagram stories and stuff like that.
Do you have to control any kind of sound effects in that?
Like no,
laser noises and stuff?
Boing, boing, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask for that next year.
I think that would be a great improvement.
The boat horns, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe like gong sounds and, yeah.
Hey, it's Bryce Lewis back to the USAPL Nationals.
KUSAPL in the morning.
Lifter jumped the bar. Boing!
So, obviously, you're announcing so much because you chose to take the year off of Nationals, competing at Nationals.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that decision.
Yeah, so kind of a few things influencing that. Came off of Worlds, which was earlier this year in June. Great competition, ended up winning and had an absolute blast. But that whole prep, I had a number of injuries, just kind of nagging back pain. And honestly, leading to Worlds, I had no idea how things were going to go. It was just kind of like, I can't back out of a world championship. Let's see how things go. And it's just time to heal. So I dropped squats darn pretty low, deadlifts too, and doing a lot of bodybuilding type leg pressing, leg extensions and stuff like that. And, you know, bench feels good, so progressing normally there. But so the one thing is I just need some time to heal. The second thing is it's just been a while since I've been able to see some real progress on my squat or my deadlifts in terms of, like, absolute load. So I want to be able to squat over 7 in training. I want to be able to pull over 8 in training and, like, just prove to myself that, like, yes, I'm getting stronger. Yes, training is working and stuff like that. So competing is great, like, there's kind of two big things that I love about powerlifting. One is competing and one is like making progress. And I'm missing this other piece. So I want to be able to just crush it in training. And I think I need some time to do that.
So, yeah, Marissa is going to take the Arnold off for a lot of the same reasons that you're talking about. You were doing this, the circuit, the Nationals, Arnold Worlds, Nationals, Arnold Worlds circuit.
Yeah.
And it is tough, like, especially as you get really strong, which of course you are, the stronger you get, the harder it is to compete really frequently in 3 big competitions. Now, Nationals, you got to win to make Worlds. Arnold, you're there to trying to set records and win a couple bucks and be on the big stage, and then Worlds, of course, is everything you can do to win, plus, you know, the traveling for all of it. It really just catches up to you. Do you think, even less accomplished lifters would be smart to maybe be proactive in doing what you're doing now rather than having to kind of react to the situation?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a balance, too, because, like, in theory, you should be able to compete, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. Like, that's 17 weeks in between training cycles, which is plenty of time to get stronger. So I think you can approach this a number of ways. Number one, compete, but maybe don't have your third attempts be as hard as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, so make your third attempts a little bit easier. Or just don't compete as often. So compete 2 times a year or something like that. So, yeah, I think there's room for that. As you get more experience, yeah, you're going to need more time to continue to get stronger. It's just a matter of course, or not train as hard, or train differently, or something like that.
So to the effect of training differently, I know you were back on the volleyball court the other week, your first love, maybe volleyball. Have you been doing more of that type of stuff too?
I just need to scratch that itch every once in a while. I went to play at CSU, it's a local college, and I got crushed afterwards. So like my original plan was, all right, I'm gonna go play a little bit. I'll play in the back row. Like I'll just stay for an hour and then I'll sit out. Like just test the waters. I'll come back next week. It'll be cool. Like I got there and that switch turns on and I've just played for 3 hours straight and I was sore for 2 days afterwards. So stuff kind of happens, but I do want to feel a little bit more athletic too. And I know that's something you've been experimenting with as well, with jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. And yeah, that was something I've got a Beers with Chad episode called like, My Biggest Powerlifting Mistake, because I got caught in you know, the circuit, you know, trying to go from one big meet to the next big meet with short enough turnarounds in between. And when the weights get so heavy, you know, 950-ish squats and stuff, for me, like, even if you're not hurt, you're not injured, you're still not right coming off of the meet. And, you know, you talked about, like, okay, we'd maybe take a little bit lighter third attempts, but you're at meets where that's not an option. You know, you can't go to Nationals and beat Garrett with conservative thirds, or go to Worlds and beat Kristoff with conservative thirds. It's going to be all out. So, you know, once you get caught up in that, and then you just... It's so important, and it's easy for me to tell other people to do it, but so much harder to do it yourself. Like, all right, let's take one step back to take two steps forward. And let's... I got caught in this cycle of, let's do a meet, have a good meet, but think like, oh man, you know, I missed two or three lifts, and they're right there. So I just want to go and take that strength that I feel like I have right now and make those lifts happen. And then... because you're not quite right coming out of the meet, training, you know, you get more and more beat up in the training, and then it doesn't happen. And then for me, that turned into like, oh, fuck this, I'm just not, I'm not lifting anymore. And then...
I think a lot of people get to that point where, like, you just get burnt out.
Yeah. And it would become a six-month process for me to get healthy, do some other fun training, and kind of get the hunger back to train hard for powerlifting again, where if right after the meet, I would have taken 6 weeks to do other stuff and you know, just have fun with training and get healthy. Then I could have ramped the training up again, but I tried to do it 1 week later. You know, so instead of it taking 6 weeks, now it took 6 months because I tried to just get right back in.
Yeah, absolutely. So finding that balance of like competitive drive, pushing forward, and then being able to pace things a little bit is important. Like that variation aspect of training, coaches and athletes apply differently. So some people, instead of just squatting, benching, and deadlifting, maybe we get the athlete doing safety bar squats or something like that. So it's kind of blended into training, you know, along with your squatting, you're doing leg pressing and stuff like that. Or some other people have distinct periods. Okay, this is my variation period. Now this is my competition specific period. And like, as long as you're doing one of those and you've got variation across difficulty and specificity over time, like, you're going to be okay in the long run.
These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whatever you want when it's convenient for you. Did you know that you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. We use Stamps.com every day to send out books and apparel to all our fans across the world. Makes it really easy and convenient. Can do it sitting on my own couch. Just print the postage out right there, mail it off, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We can buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. So right now, use Jug Life for this special offer. You get a 4-week trial, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top right of the homepage and type in Jug Life. That is stamps.com. Enter Jug Life, JUGGLIFE. Thanks.
So, Max, I know that you're renowned for your utilizing variation throughout your career.
Renowned.
Yeah, renowned.
Yeah, how do you think that kind of stuff could have benefited you?
Ugh. Well, when I was in weightlifting, all we did was four exercises, really. I mean, any variation would have been better, any kind of variation, but
four exercises, 2 to 3 times a day.
Yeah, 3 times a day, 6 days a week, 7 days a week, and it was just the same exact load, same exact rep range, same exact intensity, just everything, always the same. I mean, the variation was non-existent. There isn't any. So anything would have been variation. Anything would have been good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that cut my career really short. I think it ended up being the biggest mistake. Because the first thing that happens is burnout, right? You get tired of what you're doing. You get exhausted doing it.
Yeah.
And the second thing is injuries. That starts to accumulate. And it's not like, I don't think it's the kind of thing where like you do the same thing over and over again, suddenly you're going to like tear your hamstring.
No.
It's going to be like these
little
things.
It's the chronic stuff,
isn't it? Yeah. Oh, your hip starts to be in the wrong spot. And then it's like an inch off. And then it's like 2. And then like you're picking the bar up and you're like, it feels even, but like the weights are sliding off one end, right? And then, you know, it just gets worse and worse. It snowballs worse and worse and worse because of that.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
I think you mentioned the two biggest things that end careers.
Yeah.
It's burnout and it's injuries, you know?
Yeah. And it's a hard, and, you know, I think you guys both have a good experience in that. Like, it's hard to go from pedal to the metal, pushing, having this goal and this mindset to like, oh, I should take a step back now. Because that just seems like the most counterintuitive thing to like, you know, like switch gears and do something different because you don't see it as, it doesn't feel like something that's tangible. Like you're going to have trouble in the next couple weeks because you feel fucking great.
Yeah.
Or you're strong or whatever. And it's like, you don't realize like you're at the peak. The only way to go from there is down.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like those athletes who like you put in a deload week in the fourth week and they're like, I feel fine.
Yeah.
Why would I stop now? They're like, let's keep going. But you guys should talk to Eli Burks, who we'll get a chance to see on the stage tomorrow in primetime in the 105s. He spent last year's competitive cycle off doing strongman stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to see if that paid off for him kind of coming back. And training looks like he's crushing it. So
we'll see. So the anyone who follows you on Instagram and stuff, you post a lot about sports psychology and high performance and all that stuff. What really spurred your interest in the mental side of all of this? Had you struggled kind of mentally in competition before?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's kind of 3 big reasons why I got involved in all that kind of stuff. One is stuff I've struggled with. So how can this affect me? 2, we coach a lot of athletes and we want to provide comprehensive powerlifting coaching. So if there's this new thing that I've learned that I think can help athletes, I want to learn more about it so I can help them. And lastly, all these guys like Eric Helms and Mike Israetel and Greg Knuckles, like they're crushing it when it comes to putting out information about periodization and biomechanics, and they haven't really gotten to sports psychology yet, so I wanted to jump on that before they did. So it's just kind of finding my niche that I can help put out good information. I started finding out all this information about how I can not wet the bed with my mindset on the platform and just kind of be more predictable.
That was all only consistent. A figurative problem, though.
Yes, okay. Figuratively. Just...
When we were doing this podcast last year's Nationals with Kristen Densmore, the topic of the incontinence had come up on the platform.
Okay.
She's like, lots of women and men urinate on the platform. Just kind of stopped and we're like, lots of men urinate on the platform? I know a couple guys projectile vomited yesterday, but
in the 63s, we did see some incontinence. If you're doing a tough third deadlift, like, you see some of that sometimes.
But this was only a figurative wetting of the bed.
Yeah, absolutely.
You weren't that man that she was talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think ultimately we want our best training mentality to be something we can duplicate on the platform.
Yeah.
You know, as we come here, stakes are higher. You've got a crowd in front of you. There's performance anxiety. Like all these kind of things can affect your performance. Even if your strength level is exactly the same, you know, you can do your best deadlift here, you know, in the middle of this lobby and doing it completely differently in there in front of a crowd on the stage. And that's important. That's important for coaches to know. That's important for athletes to know.
What do you think is the biggest, like, I don't want to say what's the biggest misconception about sports psychology, but I've had a lot of athletes I work with, and you sometimes come across athletes that believe their mental game is the strongest part of their game.
Yeah.
And in reality, from an objective outside perspective, it's not. It's definitely not.
Right.
But do you think there's something about sports psychology that's like a kind of like an aha thing about it? Like, oh yeah, this is the thing that people really kind of don't understand about it or miss, or this is the biggest kind of, maybe for you was the biggest, you know,
yeah,
epiphany?
I think the best way we can talk about sports psychology is take two athletes who are identical. Sports psychology can't make you lift more than you can lift. It just maximizes your potential.
Right.
So two athletes with a 500 kilo show up to competition. All that good sports psychology practices do is allow that athlete to hit 500. You know, they don't allow you to hit 520. They just maximize your capabilities. And that other athlete may end up actually in the competition performing at 480. So it just allows you to clear some of the garbage out of the way so that you can get the most out of yourself.
It's kind of like taking the parking brake off.
Yeah, so to say, exactly. Right? And that parking brake can be lack of motivation. We can talk about confidence. We can talk about comparison between you and other lifters. Like, there's a lot of different directions it can go. And ultimately, it's just bringing the focus back to you and what you can do.
Is there one of those aspects that you're talking about, confidence, motivation, comparison to other lifters, that you see more frequently in athletes that you work with or more frequently in athletes you see?
Yeah, I think everyone suffers from performance anxiety up on platform to some degree. And some people can harness that to be a better lifter. And for some people, it makes them perform worse as you start thinking about outside stuff. And for the high-level athletes, a lot of them have problems with focusing on what other people are capable of instead of focusing on what they themselves can do.
Yeah.
So you get caught up in, oh, you know, Eli's doing such and such bench press, such and such squat, how's that going to affect me? Well, it shouldn't. Like, it has nothing to do with you, yeah. But we let it affect us.
Yeah, I was trying to convey the idea to athletes that, you know, there's as many weights out there as there's enough weights for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, just because this person squats a 10-pound PR, that doesn't mean that they took 10 of your pounds away. Like,
that's absolutely right, yeah.
Though, that would be a very interesting meet.
It would.
Just a pile of weights.
About 10,000 kilos total.
Yeah.
How about it?
There's a pile of weights. You wrestle for who gets to put them on their bar.
Yeah.
I think it would spice the sport up a lot.
It would.
So if there's one sort of sports psychology nugget that that you felt helped you personally a lot, that you wouldn't mind sharing, what would that be?
Yeah. When you have any doubts or anything like that, I think if you can fall back on this question, what can I control, that really helps put things into focus. Because if it's not something you can control, then you don't have to worry about it. So if you can ask yourself, is this something I can control? Then I think that really frees you. And if you can't control it, you let it go. Like, this is in stoicism as well, but I think for athletes, there's so many things that we can't control. You know, what are the timings? Like, what's the bar on the platform? Or like, which platform am I on, or what are the lights? Like, you gotta let that shit go. Or a missed attempt that's now in the past.
Yeah.
Are you dwelling on that now? Is this affecting what you're doing right now?
Yeah.
So we have 9 lifts. You can treat them all independently. Like, what can I control right now?
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Especially back in the market downturn, I had very, very frustrating experiences using brokers where I felt like they were making money without me making money. So it's really, really nice that Robinhood has no brokerage charges. While other brokers charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees on trading stocks, so you can keep all of your profits. Plus, they have these easy-to-understand charts, market data, so place a trade in just 4 taps from your phone. Robinhood's web platform also lets you view stock collections, like 100 most popular, depending on the sector that you're most interested in, and you can curate different categories. So it gives you a lot of really interesting feedback to help you learn how to invest better. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. So you can sign up at juglife.robinhood.com. That's juglife.robinhood.com.
Yeah, nail on the head there for sure.
Yeah.
I always say that control what you can control, don't worry about what you can't. And to the other effect is like, when, and I've struggled with this myself, you miss a lift, you dwell on it, or you get ahead of yourself in the meet. Yeah, you know, you're talking about your third when you're on your opener.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like you got it's not about going 9 for 9.
Yeah.
It's about going 1 for 1 9 times.
Yes, absolutely.
And I've gotten the opportunity to compete and coach all around the world, the biggest meets from, you know, Big Dogs, Pro Raw, US Open, IPF Worlds, all that stuff, and have seen very firsthand some of people who are regarded as the best lifters in the world, some of the people regarded as the best lifters ever, complain about shit that is, one, totally out of their control, and two, identical for every person there.
Yeah.
You know, oh, this bar is too whippy, it's hot. Like, you're not in your own fucking biosphere where it's only hot for you.
Absolutely.
Like, and I think, especially when people verbalize that stuff at meets, it gives it so much more power in their mind.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if it's hot, yes, everyone feels that it's hot and it crosses their mind. But as soon as you come out and say, like, man, like, damn, it's hot back here or something, like, it just gives it that much more weight on your mind and affecting your performance. So have you done any sort of exercises, like mental exercises, journaling, anything to that effect to help with this stuff?
Yeah, journaling is a great thing too. And with all these things, the ideal state is, in training, you think about this, you do your work. Competition, the work's been done. You just get to kind of go on autopilot and perform.
Yeah.
So you never want to add new...
Training is the time for thinking. Competition is the time for doing.
Yeah, and that's with mental stuff too. Like, you don't want to add a new mental thing the day of competition. You know, like, today we're going to have you meditate for 5 minutes before you go out on the platform. Like, no, it's not anything new for a lifter in competition. But yeah, the big thing is focusing on what you can control. Another thing is ritual. So, especially in weightlifting, I'm sure ritual is extremely important.
Yeah.
Stepping to the bar every single time, hands same time, same exact repeatable ritual.
That's a huge point, because what ritual really does in the process of that is, like, it's taking the smallest things and working at each little tiny piece one after another until it becomes memorized.
Yeah.
The whole idea of, like, approaching a squat or whatever, you know, you don't even know what it is, but you take the same steps, this foot, that foot, this hand, that hand. When you focus on those little things and develop them, it's like, you know, you combine lots of little tiny actions into one thing that's unconscious.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to think about it. And the next step. But if you're focusing, and I, you know, she'll never watch this, but my wife may be one of the culprits there, where it's like, you're consciously thinking about all of the ritualistic things you're doing, it no longer becomes a ritual, it just becomes conscious action, where you're just distracting yourself by exhausting energy. Where does this hand go? What does that hand do?
Yeah.
Where's my pinky toe? Where's my big toe? Right? Is there anything in between them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it just, you know, becomes a challenge, right? I think that's
leave the garage door open.
Yeah, right? You're focused on so much other than just, you know, can you distill this down to what is the feeling of trying as hard as possible on a squat?
Yeah.
Right? What's that rhythm, that moment of explosion at the bottom? That only one thing I'm thinking, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that way you can kind of let some of that other stuff go and just kind of focus on effort instead of hand placements or foot pressure or all those minute details.
Yeah.
Like, we want that to be automatic.
Yeah. And the only way for it to become automatic is to give it, you know, all the attention it needs in training, where you get to think about it as much as you want. Think about it as much as possible, 70 kilos, 120 kilos, like all these weights where putting the greatest effort to lifting the weight isn't necessary. So you can put all this effort to the parts around that.
Yeah.
Do you remember the movie Basketball?
Yes.
Do you feel like a scenario like that, where someone has to psych you out while you're squatting or deadlifting, could potentially be beneficial?
So remind me what happened.
Remember where they would, like, the guy would stand in front of the guy and have to, like, say something that would psych him out, and then he'd, like, miss the shot?
Oh,
that was the whole premise of the game, right? Was that?
I'm guessing, like, you could do that in powerlifting, and I've heard stories of kind of the days of how powerlifting used to be, where, like, you know, Kurt Karwoski is, like, going up for a squat, and someone's like, you're a pussy, you know, like, as he's, like, setting up to squat his direct competitor.
Like the guy from Happy Gilmore.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Shooter McGavin.
I'm glad.
We'll miss this squat, jackass. It is kind of, I found that surprising, that it happens a little bit more in Australia, where if the refs make like a bad call, the fans kind of get upset about it.
Yeah.
Because that's the expectation. You go to a football game, basketball game,
yeah.
Fans are yelling at the refs, they're heckling, you know, opposing team. But if, you know, if that ever happened at a powerlifting and weightlifting meet, you would think you're the biggest dickhead ever.
No, yeah. The Iranian fans in Worlds, at World Weightlifting, the Iranian fans
where
are
they going at?
Insane.
You know, you kicked out, you didn't do your job.
Yeah, Salimi, shocker, press out. And he gets called for a press out, and they're just super pissed. And
the vuvuzelas, right? The like air horns, yeah. like
an entire stand, like one entire bleacher is full of just Iranian fans.
Yeah.
And they're going wild. And yeah. It was very impressive to see Martin Seam, Estonian lifter, came up after and nailed a PR clean and jerk. Like,
I follow him on Instagram. He's insane.
He's very strong.
Yeah, super strong guy.
Yeah.
Very fun to watch. But that was a great moment. That they were.
Yeah. But before I forget it, the whole ritual piece and stuff like that, like, the ritual's cool and all, and I think people lose that when it comes to a PR, you know? Like, all of a sudden, when there's a new weight on the bar, mm-hmm. people feel like they need to do something more than normal to
Well, your
to
secret
squat
technique,
this.
Your secret technique that you keep under lock and key
right.
that you're going to...
Yeah, now I'm ready
for PRs.
For this new weight, yeah.
I'm going to use this one.
So the thing that bridges that gap between... you know, the ritual that you use on training weights and the ritual that you use on the normal ones is confidence.
Yeah.
Knowing that you have what it takes, believing that you have what it takes, now you can relax a little bit and do your normal ritual.
Yeah, I think when the weight gets bigger, people's mind goes to the weight instead of staying more like intrinsically, almost like selfishly focused in a lot of ways. And even when I was doing track, my coach would talk about, you know, you're thinking about the ball instead of thinking about all your movement. Well, that was great. Bryce, where can people follow you, find out more about TSA and all that stuff?
I post a lot of this stuff on my Instagram at Bryce_TSA. We've got a website where we talk about our coaching at thestrengthathlete.com. You can send us a message there. And other than that, we post stuff on our Instagram at thestrengthathlete.
Do you have a competition planned? That'll be your next one back, or?
I'm thinking May, June, because I'd like to qualify for Nationals next year. So that'll give me, from now till then to have a productive off season. So that's kind of the structure that I'm aiming for.
Very cool. You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or on Facebook, or you can email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And if you love The Jug Life, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice. We always appreciate that, and it helps more people find the show. Subscribe to the YouTube if you're interested in online coaching, powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, power building. JuggernautCoaching.com is the place for that. I don't know when this is going to come out, so I can't talk about any events or anything like that. So I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith, and at Juggernaut Training, Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for watching. See you next week.